The Athletic.
Hello all and welcome to the 73rd edition of On The Ball, a Norwich City podcast from The Athletic. That would be the championship champions, Norwich City. I am Michael Bailey. I hope this finds you safe and well on the way. Campeones, boycott allness, and last of the games. We'll work through all this and more with our guests this fine morning, and it is a morning. Norwich number wang chief at NCFC Numbers, also known as our very own Steve Sanders.
Morning, Michael.
And former Norwich City publications and programme editor, Dan Brigham.
Hi, Michael.
Thanks for joining us, everyone out there in this beautifully yellow world. How are we doing, Steve? How are you? I almost called you Stephen then. How are you?
Well, that'd have been a new thing, wouldn't it? We'll just stick with number wang chief, if that's all right. I'm okay, thanks. Yeah, it's sort of, it's that stage that happens every year where you get towards the end of the season and you think, oh, there's a huge void coming up in my weekends. What am I going to do? But I'm sort of, I don't know about you, I'm slightly relieved about the end of this season. It just feels it's been ever so slightly relentless, doesn't it? So a break from Norwich City, as fun as it's been this year, might actually be quite nice.
It feels like it's been 2 years solidly of football, which it is or hasn't. It just feels like it. And the break will be lovely, obviously. I'm quite looking forward to it. Dan, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I agree. It'll be nice to end the season and to also have a international tournament to look forward to in the summer as well. To go up as champions and then have an international tournament is a nice way to head into the summer.
It's always the best combination. And likewise, when there's an international summer tournament and you've been relegated, you don't really want to worry about football. You want to get the break in. So at least we're getting the flip side of that. Before we crack on, right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of £3.99 per month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/NorwichPod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That is theathletic.com/NorwichPod. Right, let's crack on with this week's headline act. I mean, no guessing what we got this week. Norwich City are champions, just like we predicted. Well, just like I predicted, actually, before a ball was kicked this season. I should probably get that in straight away. I was on this from the start. And we have kind of been saying, I don't think we've really doubted it was going to happen, have we, Steve? So when it happened, how did you feel? Where were you?
I was watching this time. I mean, when you say never doubted it was going to happen, I didn't on Saturday. There have been times a few months ago when I might have done. But yeah, the longer this season has gone on, the more we've looked like doing it. And yeah, in terms of Saturday, obviously we went behind early, didn't we? Didn't start particularly well.
No.
But because Watford were never in front at Brentford, it kind of felt like... and. Even when we went behind, it felt like there were goals. Reading were, I thought, extremely accommodating. The kind of games we weren't getting any of in the first half of the season at Carrow Road, when teams would just come and stick 10 behind the ball. But with Reading having kind of given up the ghost on their playoff chase, they obviously thought, let's throw a bit of caution to the wind, and we just tore them apart, really. I'm not saying anything that no Norwich fan hasn't already thought, but it is so thoroughly deserved. 96 points is our... Is it 96? Yeah, it is 96.
Yeah.
It's our best total ever. And I think this side has a claim. Well, obviously, it's all entirely subjective to say that this is the best Norwich City team we've ever had. And I think Saturday was kind of further vindication of that, really.
There is a piece of that on The Athletic. But yeah, 96 points, more than they got in League One, which is, and that was kind of like, well, we're not supposed to be at this level. So of course we've won the division. But fun and games. Dan, where were you?
Yeah, I was at home, as I have been for most of the games this season, enjoying it. It was quite gladdening to watch the scenes at full time and afterwards as well, with people gathering outside Carrow Road, just, despite obviously breaking social distancing, etc. But it seemed very friendly. seemed spontaneous as well. So that was lovely to see. And you could see the players really enjoyed it as well. They've not had a chance to celebrate with any of the fans. Even, you know, walking around the city, they've not really had the chance to do that like they normally would. So it was good that they've got that kind of ability, you know, the ability to celebrate with the fans after such a long season.
Now, guys, I mean, I was there, so this is an opportunity for you guys to ask me anything about the occasion that you're maybe desperate to ask and I can't possibly think of, given it's a bank holiday Monday. But it was curious interviewing people while all the celebrations were going on outside and the stadium was still empty. That was really strange.
I saw you on there when the camera panned in at the end, sort of 15, 20 minutes after full time, panned in on Stuart Webber doing his man of the people walk around the ground, fist bumping everyone, including yourself and Archant's Dave Freezer. And that just sort of summed up the kind of what he brings to this club, Stuart Webber, in a way. He treats everyone equally. He ensures that everyone gets as much equal amount of credit as well. Very businesslike. And then, as I think you wrote in your piece, he was sort of soon off after that because he's got a Premier League season to plan for.
Yes, which I think is the last one's been keeping him up at night, to be honest, all this year. So it'll be, I think that was what he revealed on the High Performance podcast, which is well worth a listen, by the way. So, yeah, I mean, Reading, just touching on the game, like you said, Steve, there was one point, I think, where Reading were breaking forward and they had about eight people forwards on the counter. I was like, that is a lot of people in attack. But I guess part of the problem was that they were so open at the back. And I mean, Norwich did take them apart in the second half. And there was some wonderful football, which I guess we've all grown accustomed to. And I guess we're all looking at it thinking, well, let's just enjoy this while we can, because we know what next season will be like. Or maybe we don't. Who knows? I think there's a lot of second guessing going on, obviously. But did anything stick out from you? I have to say again, Kieran Dow, two goals. And I was speaking to him after the game and I didn't really want to tell him, you know, it's interesting, Kieran, isn't it? How you sort of drift from, you know, scoring goals, creating goals, and then just completely drifting in a game without really, and then getting substituted. Which,
yeah, I'd say that's probably not a good question to put to you.
No, I mentioned the assists and goals and then shied away from the last bit. But I mean, it has been a bit like that. And instead, I guess he's that kind of player. That's what it's always felt to me. And if he's having an impact in more games than he's not, then it actually is fine.
Yeah, I was thinking about Dowell actually, and I don't think he's as much of a natural fit for the way that we like to play as, say, a Stiefelman or a Vrančić. I think he can often give possession away more readily than those two in terms of our build-up play. He's maybe not quite as good at linking up, but what he does give you, or has given us certainly over the last few weeks, is more of a goal threat, and I think he is someone who will take chances more than perhaps either of those two do. I know Vrančić's goal record is not bad, but he hasn't scored in quite a long time, even in the run when he was in the team. So I think, and actually that's something that we really did lack, certainly the beginning of last season when we were creating and not scoring. Just to go back to something else, I mean, talk about Reading again, I just had a quick look at that. We had 12 shots on target, and the last time we had more than that in a game was actually the 7-1 against Reading 4 years ago. So they were incredibly open. And I did look at their defence was... Gibson and Holmes, two young centre halves, wasn't it? And I thought, well, maybe we're lucky to play them on a time when they've got those two at the back. But then I thought, we've got an 18-year-old centre half playing. So, and I think that for me encapsulates what part of the reason why Norwich is so, this Norwich City vintage, it just works so well, because you can stick an 18-year-old centre half who already knows exactly the way that we're going to play and can just fit in there. I mean, you know, obviously it takes a bit of talent as well, but it just the fact that he'd never played for the first team before and has come in. Omar Bamadeli obviously had a brilliant game on Saturday, I thought, and looked so natural. And I think that's the thing, injuries have not derailed us at all this season. And and just the fact that we've lost two centre-halves can stick someone in, it doesn't make any difference. It's fantastic.
He was outstanding, wasn't he, on Saturday, I thought, Dan?
Yeah, really excellent. And I agree with Steve's point. And I think I made it last time I was on here when that period in, was it October, when we went through so many injuries. But players slotted in because they're so well coached and the structure is so well known to them. And I think that's also a difference to 2018-19 when we went up as well. I think it's easier to see the obvious patterns of play on the field now than it was then, when we would rely on sort of last minute winners and quick breaks and sort of relentless pressure. This time it's a bit more structured. And I think Tim Krul mentioned in a think it was an interview in the Mirror, saying he's seeing sort of patterns of play on the field ahead of him that he's not even seeing with the Dutch national side at the moment. So I think, you know, that's the benefit of sticking with a manager as well, isn't it? When things go wrong, if you stick with a manager and believe in him, that kind of structure and that kind of basis of performance only improves and becomes more ingrained as well. And that's the kind of thing that should hopefully stand us in a little bit more good stead and a better position when we do get to the Premier League in 3 months' time.
Oh, can't wait. Fixtures in June. Yeah, it's some really interesting stuff actually from Tim Krul after the game, and him talking about them being a bit more streetwise and not, how did he put it? He said not running around like as if they've got to do everything all the time, but actually being having a bit more control about them, which again, you get from maybe having done it once. And even when Norwich got relegated, I felt like one of the disappointing factors was I didn't know whether they would get a second go at it, because I feel like they are quite quick learners as a group and as a people in the club. So it will be fascinating from here, most definitely. I'm looking forward to it.
I think just quickly, the word you used there, control, is the one that I would, that's the key difference between this side and the side of 2 years ago. It feels like we're completely in control of games this season. Whether we'll still be able to exert that next year against better sides remains to be seen, but I think it does feel like we've got a better chance.
I still end up watching a match of the day and highlights thing in recent weeks and just going, that's different, isn't it? That is a different level, having obviously completely forgotten what it was like last season watching it in person. We did also have the social media boycott that took place last week. I don't think we actually properly talked about it last week, but we're still in it as we record. It's very strange for me. I don't know what your guys' experiences of it, but for me, really, really detached, a bit more straightforward, got to be honest. But everything felt quite detached. The whole point of it is obviously hugely important. And as I think I put on my channels before the boycott took place, I'm desperately hoping this is something that sticks rather than a big gesture that everyone's really happy to make. And nothing worse than seeing media organizations doing it and explaining how great they are for doing it and it becoming horribly jingoistic, which maybe isn't quite the right word, but I don't want to see that. I don't want to see the gesture. I want to see action off the back of it. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see everyone going back on Tuesday as if nothing's happened. And I'm talking about, you know, the companies, but also the people who seem incapable of knowing what being a nice human is. What was it like for you guys following everything and your views on it all, Dan?
Yeah, it was interesting. Having to go get the team lineup from canaries.co.uk took me back to 2010 or something like that. But I think it's the right thing to do. I'd like to see it again, you know, during the Euros potentially as well. I think reform is needed and we can't just rely on the social media companies to do that internally. I think it takes unified pressure that hits them in the pocket, and they rely on ad revenue through impressions and engagements and sharing. So anything that hits them there with direct action could lead to change. I think it needs more than this. Otherwise it does just become a bit of an empty gesture if it's just a one-off. And it's important that, especially with Twitter, less so with Instagram, but it's important that just how dominant sport is on Twitter and how reliant on sport is. When you think that Man United have more followers than McDonald's, Apple, Adidas, and Nike combined, that's the power of sport on Twitter. So a blanket sort of boycott across sport, not just football, I know some other sports joined in as well, does have that sort of power, I think, to hit them in the pocket. So I don't think it was an empty gesture, as some people were suggesting. I think it has to be the start of something. And as we've seen with football protests, which I guess we won't really get into it kind of ended the European Super League. And there's no reason why a protest can't work to speed up the reforms in social media companies. And, you know, they've not done enough. They are doing some things, though, but they can take more action. They can police it themselves better. They just choose not to because they know that sort of hate and abuse can drive a lot of traffic, which drives their revenues. So I do think protest is important.
Brilliantly said, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, Dan just said it brilliantly, really. I elected not to tweet this weekend for whatever difference that made. But I think it's something that needs to be done. from a personal perspective, I'm lucky in that I don't receive a lot of abuse and haven't yet, but I think it's, you know, it's the worst side of social media, obviously. And nothing's going to, as Dan says, the tech companies are not going to do this on their own, and it's going to take a huge, it's going to take something like this and more before it can be eradicated. Maybe it never will be eradicated, but you know, I think people have knocked it, and I think that kind of misses the point. You're right, we can't just go back to how it was, but you know, unless people kind of step up, and sport is the, you know, sport, I suppose I live in that bubble where I follow lots of football teams, lots of sport teams, and perhaps I notice it more, but it does seem that in terms of that, that's a huge part of the way that social media is run. And without that, my timeline over the weekend felt quite empty. So I think it will make a difference, and I hope it does.
Too true. Steve, did you still compile some stats, even though you didn't get to tweet them, or did you take the weekend off?
I've kind of half taken the weekend off. Normally, I wouldn't bother, but I just think because we've won the title, it feels like I've had stuff which I've had a couple of weeks ago.
Well, we've got a podcast now. If you want to rattle any of them off.
We think I came prepared with them.
Oh, no.
The only one that's...
Yes, I knew there'd be one.
We now have more like EFL titles this century. No team's had four this century in terms of Championship, League One, League Two. So we're the first to get to four. I would imagine Manchester United and Chelsea have probably got more than that.
They bought theirs, don't they?
We're not interested in Premier League, not yet.
Yeah.
So, there you go. There's a little freebie.
I think they said on the coverage, if we beat Barnsley, that'll be the first time we've won 30 games in a season. I don't know if NCFC numbers can verify that.
Which I think... and you can maybe check that if you're online, you could check this, Steve. But I think Norwich were capable of beating Reading's record of, but I think that was 31 wins in a season, or it was 30. So I wonder, can Norwich equal it, or was 31 maybe their record? I can't remember now.
I can have a quick look now. I would imagine because they got 106 points in there, so I'd imagine they probably did get more than 30 wins. But I can check the other one that I had a quick look at that just has sprung to mind is I think that Taimi Pukki will be the first player to score 25 plus goals in two title winning seasons since Bobby Zamora for Brighton, I think, in something like 2002. So that's a slightly more niche one. But
woof. I mean, the thing that struck me writing my piece from the weekend, which of course you can read on The Athletic, is that Daniel Farke has now won more championship titles than he has Manager of the Month awards, which is quite probably not really how it should work. But there we go. Let's move on to things we are not going to talk about, as is our regular section. These are the things that have happened and deserve acknowledgement, but we are only going to acknowledge them by stating how we are not going to talk about them. Hope that makes sense. We also only have 3 minutes to do it, which, of course, we always religiously stick to. Therefore, cue the dramatic music, please, producer Ollie. Right then, this week I am not going to talk about Norwich City's celebration shirts, although they looked very nice, I thought, and they did a job. They sold out very quickly. If you got one, well done. I think that probably does it in terms of making sure Norwich have a new kit supplier next season, but we probably better not talk about that.
Oh, yeah. It makes me worried about who the new kit sponsor might be next season potentially as well.
Well, do you want to have a guess at who they'd like? Or
it's going to be another upsettingly enormous betting firm, I imagine, isn't it?
Oh, you're talking about the shirt sponsor. Sorry, yeah. Kit manufacturer. Did I say kit manufacturer? I can't remember.
You did, yeah. I was both of them changing, I guess, weren't
we? We'll see. Yeah, it'll be really interesting who it is, but don't know is the answer there. There we go. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about that. Anyone else? Steve or Dan? Go on, you opened your mouth.
Tet's leaving, potentially. That's just too much to... prepare. And I hope if he does leave that, obviously he gets a good send off with crowds at some point as well for a testimonial.
testimonial. I mean, him coming on with Mario at the same time with about 10 minutes to go did feel a bit like, oh, don't do this, that's horrible.
My feeling with Tetti, absolutely legend, obviously, but if it gets to November next season and we're thinking, oh, I wish we'd kept Alex Tetti, we could really do with him now, probably means things haven't gone that well. So I would personally give him an extra year just because he seems like a lovely bloke and everybody likes him. Seems to be a great personality around the club. But in terms of his first team days, you kind of think a 36-year-old Tetti at Premier League level is probably not going to keep us in the Prem.
Yeah, but I kind of agree with you. I would keep him around. I think he just sets the like cultural architects. I think he could be real, especially when you're losing Ollie Skip, which is probably going to happen. One of the things I didn't want to talk about was his injury, because it does sound like a bad one. So he's certainly not going to play against Barnsley. And we'll have to see how bad it is. But, you know, hopefully he's, you know, good to go for next season. But that might make Norwich's decision up for them if they want someone in early and no umming and ahhing. So maybe it will help. But it's obviously a big blow for him. Although I have to say, I'm glad it didn't happen like 3 or 4 months ago.
I'd keep him as well. I just don't think he can ever have as many physical presence in the middle of the park in the Premier League. So I think even if Tetti's like third choice DM, defensive midfielder, then I'd absolutely keep him still.
Exactly, because I think you can just afford to have him around. I think it's different with Mario, because I think Mario deserves to go out and play some football, and it's just for him really. But yeah, for Tets. But we don't know. Maybe that will happen. It just seems, and no one's saying anything, but it does seem like they're both done. So there we go. I didn't want to talk about the fans congregating, because as Dan said, we all know the wrongs of it. And we all saw what was happening. I don't know. I'm tired of the whole situation, so I'm not going to start getting on my high horse with it, to be honest. So there we go. Anything else anyone doesn't want to talk about? Oh, the music's finished, but there you go. You can have one each if you want, one each.
Well, just Kenny. Kenny's dancing. I feel like we should just keep him around as well, so that every 2 years we can see him like kind of just parading around. I still have the image of him doing that with Scotland, and we seem to have adopted the "Yes, sir, I can boogie" as well, which I feel like that's probably his influence. That's now become a club anthem in our dressing room.
This is true. I mean, I hope Kenny celebrates like that if we stay up next season. That I think should be a minimum.
Yeah.
Dan?
Yeah, Kenny in his pants this time next season would be good, wouldn't it? obviously, let's all enjoy Oakwell on Saturday.
It is Saturday. 12:30 kickoff.
For the last 90 minutes without VAR for what may be a good long while, hopefully, if we're successful in the Premier League. But let's enjoy that while it lasts.
Surely they'll spend all summer improving VAR so it's not as bad, right? That's what happens, yeah?
Let's also hope for a horrendous decision that goes in our favour and can't be overturned on Saturday as well.
Yeah, imagine it. Imagine it. Right, let's have some centrefold, shall we? It was awards galore since we were last on the pod. We had the EFL Awards. We had Norwich's Player of the Season Awards. They both come up. And also, guys, if you want to think of any bonus awards that should be dished out, that's obviously me giving you a huge amount of notice, then you can think about that over the course of this section. And likewise, you guys and girls out there, if you can think of any bonus awards that should get flagged up, we can go through them next week in our final podcast of the season. We can have like a bonus mini award section. But the EFL Awards, which is a fine night to be involved in, but obviously this was kind of a remote Sky Sports job that obviously went out on Thursday night, because you wouldn't want to do that during a social media boycott. Team, I'm sure you've all seen it, but in the EFL Championship team of the season, we had Grant Hanley, Teemu Pukki, Emi Buendia and Max Ahrens. Rather inexplicable absence of Tim Krul, I would say. And it was managed by Daniel Farker. So we now have to end all conversations about Daniel Farker not getting recognition, because that is significant recognition. We'll see what the LMA awards dish out later in the summer. And obviously, Emi Buendia was also named Championship Player of the Season as well, which I think we've all kind of seen firsthand. Max Ahrens didn't win Young EFL Player of the Season. That went to...
Elise?
Yes, it did, didn't it? Michael Elise, who had a very good season and actually looked quite handy on Saturday too. Recognition, yes, boys, from the EFL? Happy?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I don't hold much stock by the individual awards that much, because I think they are entirely subjective and really don't matter a great deal in the grand scheme of things. However, I do think it would have been, I do think it would have been a bit of a travesty had Emi Buendia not been recognised as the best player in the championship this year. I haven't seen Ivan Toney play 90 minutes every week, but I just struggle to believe that anybody has been as consistently good and as entertaining as Emi. And I just feel that actually, yes, if you're going to reward it, if you're going to give out individual awards, there's an individual who absolutely deserves one. And I don't know. I mean, in terms of great seasons, there's not been that many better for us that I can remember. He's just been so influential almost from minute one, not quite. But he's got better and better as it's gone on, really, hasn't he? So, yeah, very pleased for him, I think, more than anything else.
Well, he had a suspension to see out, didn't he, at the start of the season, which does seem to happen. So hopefully there won't be one this time around. I mean, I saw a debate on the Thursday or Friday about, you know, best championship players in recent memory. And I think Adel Taarabt and Ruben Neves were the two that were mentioned. And I mean, I think, you know, to say Emi would be anywhere near Ruben Neves' level, I think would be fair. And also, I think he's probably got much more potential for longevity than Adel Taarabt would be my take on it. But there we go. I mean, do we assume, Dan, that Tim Krul wasn't goalkeeper because Norwich couldn't have more than, or, you know, couldn't have five players in the team?
Yeah, were there any other, because Begovic got it, didn't he? Were there any other Bournemouth players? I can't remember if there were. So
Dan Juma was in it, yeah.
Well, fair enough. And it's... I don't know, Begovic is an excellent goalkeeper. And there was a time before we got Tim Krul, I thought it would be great to get him in, actually. But Krul's been, I mean, he's barely put a foot wrong, has he? Maybe a few injuries.
Begovic has made so many errors. He's made loads of mistakes.
I've not seen enough of Bournemouth this season to know that. But, I mean, he's a highly rated keeper, I guess. But, yeah, Krul's barely done anything wrong, has he? And he's got the most saves per shot in the Championship as well, Krul has. But is Dan Juma in the side? Because it made me think, actually, with Elise and Dan Juma, that's probably the kind of player and Saar, you know, and these Dan Juma and Saar, what combined like £70 million worth of talent there. But that's probably the kind of player we've missed in our squad. They're a sort of step up from Hernandez and Paheta, aren't they? And I wonder if that's the kind of position we'll be looking to recruit, someone with a bit of physicality and pace that those guys have.
I wonder with Tim whether him missing a large chunk of the season, well, a large chunk, but 10, 15 games, whatever it was that McGovern stepped in for, meant they thought, well, Begovic has played more games, therefore he's probably more deserving, which is why I think these team of the season things are a bit of a nonsense, because you can't possibly watch everyone play every game. So maybe that was why. Obviously, we would have given it to Tim, but I don't know.
Obviously.
And obviously, yeah. picking Toney and Pukki's just bailing out, isn't it? Because no one plays two up front anymore. So they've decided to go two up front because they couldn't pick between them.
I mean, someone made the point that you had Pukki, Toney, Buendia, Dan Juma, Elise, and I can't remember who the other one was, but it was literally like you've not got much midfield protection there.
I noticed Bradley Johnson tweeting you, Michael, in the week, yes, saying no Ollie Skip, and I thought it's probably a fair point that Skip does get in there, but actually that what he provides in terms of kind of quantifying the impact is not as great as someone like Elise and obviously Buendia, who are going to get a lot more goals and assists.
Exactly, which again makes a mockery of the whole thing. we also had Norwich's Player of the Season award, which went to Emi Buendia, of course. Grant Hanley was second, and Ollie Skip was third. So at least Ollie Skip got some recognition there, because the fact he didn't appear in any sort of EFL awards did seem rather strange. But there we go. So that was grand. Are you happy with the three?
Yeah, the top, definitely Emi and Hanley was number two. It's just you can argue for anyone else really in that top three. But I think it's just interesting that we've almost taken Pukki's goals for granted so much that a guy with 26 goals this season is not, I think he was fourth actually, but he's not got into the top three is pretty extraordinary, and just shows the strength across that side this season.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing about Pukki, actually. Just he's had a brilliant season, almost going unnoticed. What I enjoy about the Player of the Season is just how tiny the second and third trophies are compared to Emi Buendia's. So I think, I can't remember who it was, and apologies for not crediting, but someone saying that they're the same size, because Hanley had this one that was about kind of a foot tall, and Emmy's holding one that's almost, you know, as big as his torso.
Yeah, I do wish they were exact replicas, only really small. I think that's what they probably should have done, rather than slightly different trophies. But there we go. So, any bonus awards? We could have unsung hero, which I asked Daniel Farker ahead of the game at the weekend. He gave it to all his backroom staff, obviously, because that's, you know, the nice thing to do.
Unsung hero has got to be Sorensen, surely, filling in at left back for so long, unfailingly. I did think of a managerial award for trolling your own player. Could be Daniel Farker's famous impression of Giannoulis's throw-in, which remains a highlight of this season for me.
The gif is a wonder.
I was really disappointed, actually, when, was it Cantwell, I think, scooped one over on Saturday, that it didn't then cut to Daniel Farker doing an impression of that as well.
Was that when he tried to, when he tried to scoop the through ball pass?
Yeah.
I can tell you after that, he was shouting, serious passes with, I think, expletives in between. But of course, Todd pulled off the same pass and Kieran Dall scored from it. So, you know, what's a serious pass? Who knows?
Getting it right.
Indeed. Anything else? I mean, most ignored player almost feels like Max Ahrens, because no one's talked about him in anything, yet his consistency has been nuts. I think we spoke about that on the pod last week. Max Ahrens. Did I say Ahrens again? Oh. That most ridiculous decision is him changing his name. Although it isn't changed, obviously. It was just like the realisation, but oof.
I would like to see do you think Emmy stole his own, you know, best bit of skill of the season with that Rabona to Team Pookie? I'm hoping that someone is going to put together a compilation of all the brilliant bits of Buendia skill and you know, bringing the ball down under his spell, and just maybe have a 5-minute video of that. Can someone please do that? Because I think that pass on Saturday might have just won it for me. It was incredible.
How was Emmy's goal not in the goals of the season for the EFL Awards as well, by the way? I was watching them all going, well, that's not better. Well, that's not better. But yeah, anyway, maybe we've done with that debate. Well, look, that's one for you out there. If you're using social media after Monday, if anyone can think of any bonus awards and you want to throw them at us, we'll compile them for next week. The more wonderful and random, the better. We will have a think and a go at trying to come up with some more as well for next week's end of season podcast, which is, of course, hugely exciting. Okay, cue John Motson.
This is almost fantasy football.
Not much crystal ball gazing now, because there's nothing else really to predict. And we're not going to talk about the summer, or maybe we can do that next week. Norwich go to Barnsley. Barnsley are in the playoffs and I think feel like they're in, you know, kind of let's prepare for that mode, which I guess you can understand. I don't know how much there is really riding on the top six, or the four playoff places anyway right now, but as always, we like to have a little look and maybe predict what's going on. Anything you want to predict at the weekend then, for painting the picture so everyone can laugh at us for hindsight? I mean, Norwich, it's kind of the flip side of the FA Cup game, I suppose, isn't it? Barnsley are probably got their minds on other things, whereas Norwich are like, well, let's get to 99 points.
Yeah, difficult one to predict, isn't it, with two teams who've effectively got nothing to play for. I think that might work in our favour. It's going to be a difficult... I think it'll be a really fun game, actually. I think there might be goals at both ends. And I hope... I'm just getting greedy now, but I would like us to get to 99. And I don't see Farker changing the team much, do you? I think he'll probably stick with his tried and tested.
I don't see him changing much. I don't see him experimenting. I suppose it's... potentially a chance. Well, I suppose there's a decision. Is it Alex Tetti or Jakob Sorensen who plays in place of Ollie Skip?
I think it would go Sorensen on the basis that Sorensen might get game time there next season, and maybe throw Tetti on for a final, possibly final hurrah.
I don't see Jakob as an Ollie Skip replacement, I have to be honest.
No,
they're different players.
But I suppose he will get some sort of game time there, so maybe now's the time to try. Quick question, Michael. Playoff winners for you?
Well, I've kind of felt it'd be Bournemouth. I know they've sort of dipped out of form a little bit, but at this point, you probably can't really gauge their form. I just think they'll have the quality to see it out. And Brentford will be really interesting because they have got the experience of last year. So, and they also probably are preparing themselves and know what's coming, whereas, you know, Bournemouth won't have done this. So, yeah, it's really tricky. Probably one of those two. I just wonder about Bournemouth's Premier League experience. Who's going to win the playoffs, Dan?
Brentford. They seem to hit form, haven't they, now? Although, I mean, Brentford or Barnsley, either would be a great story. As long as it's not Bournemouth, then I'm happy.
Barnsley would be great from a Norwich perspective, surely, because, you know, you'd like to think Norwich could finish above Barnsley next year. let's get straight to the...
You'd like to think the same would apply to any of the playoff teams, hopefully.
One thing I haven't flagged up is my piece with Todd Cantwell. That was his game in his words, or my game in my words, from Todd Cantwell, which I hope you've enjoyed. If you haven't checked it out, please give it a read on The Athletic. One of those pieces where I really enjoyed doing it, and it was something hopefully a bit different to what you've read out there before. Really nice to talk to Todd in depth about his what he does and why he does it and how he does it. And to be honest, I could have sat there talking to him for hours about it, but they did have to chuck me off the conversation eventually. But and you know, he was fine with me. He wasn't. You know, we seemed to be on good terms, which is good. All grand. So good old Todd. Well done. I thought he was very good on Saturday against Reading, actually, as well. I look forward to seeing him in the Premier League at Norwich, presumably.
Yeah,
because that's what we're just assuming, isn't it, with a lot of people at the moment. Are we?
Yeah, it was a nice piece as well. I enjoyed that. I thought he's really bright when he talks about football, isn't he? He loves football. He's really engaging about it. I thought it was really interesting that he sort of acknowledged how much better his left foot is now as well, which I think has transformed his game. He's gone from being quite predictable, I think, to now being unpredictable. I think he's a much better player than he was when we started the last Premier League season.
I find it really interesting trying to talk to him about, you know, shapes and patterns of play and what goes into it and what he's looking for whenever he does it. And you kind of kept coming back to this player who loves the freedom of what he's doing. And actually so much of it comes down to, Steve, what Todd's processing in his head and what he's looking for. And all of them, in a way, you know, we give Daniel Farke a lot of credit and completely deserved for the way he's managing the squad and all that sort of stuff. But then also on the pitch, as well as they looked really well coached in terms of what they're doing, it also is from a degree of confidence and assurity in their ability and their own decision-making, in a way.
Yeah, I think I said it last time I was on about Todd, actually, just how confident he looks now and compared to this time a year ago, this time 2 years ago. And I think that belief coupled with he's obviously really, really well coached. And also I think the fact that he's given that freedom, he's a player that really benefits from that. I'm excited to see what he can do next year, because I think every season he's gone up another level that we've seen him. So if he can continue to do that, then he'll have a really good season next year.
Hopefully he's not the only one. That would be exciting. Right. Well, I think we decided Norwich are going to win about 6-0 at Barnsley because their mind's elsewhere. We've decided on the playoffs. So I think job done there. That's all grand. And therefore, that is it for this week's On The Ball. If you're yet to, please make sure you subscribe via your podcast player of choice. The pod is available free for everyone on your usual player and ad-free to subscribers of The Athletic via our app. Leave a review or rating if you get the chance. And if you want to get in touch with any topic proposals, then you can sling me a direct message on Twitter, which is at Michael J. Bailey. And I'll be looking at those from Tuesday onwards. In the meantime, a big thank you to our guests this evening, who were Steve. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Michael.
We'll be back next week at the usual time for this season's final On The Ball, a Norwich City Champions podcast from The Athletic. Until then, never mind the danger. We're clear. There we go. Steve and Dan, welcome to Wits End. How are we feeling? How are we looking? Are we happy on this Monday morning?
That was definitely the highest pitch start we've ever had to a Wits End, though.
The closest I'm going to get. It's the closest I'm going to get to a Stephen Gerrard impression.
I'm still recovering from my Zoom freezing, and all that was playing was you sounding like you were tutting me.
Oh, amazing. Is that what happened?
That's what did happen. I don't know what point you just made, but he didn't approve of it.
Just really rating my performance poorly there.
Not at all. I think that was probably the best podcast we've ever done. So there we go. Welcome to Wits End, everyone. All of you out there. Welcome all of you Twitterkers. We're all Twitterkers here. And if any of you have stumbled across this for the first time, you are now a Twitterker too. If you're wondering what's going on, listen to On The Ball podcast number 42, which went live on September the 8th. It's all explained there. Imagine when we get to a year of Wits End. What will we have achieved?
I don't think we want to think about that. Not really.
the word like futility just springs to mind.
Well, look, if you want to impact Wits End, any of you out there, all you need to do is email us, and you can do that directly to this specific part of the podcast with an email to Twitterkers, Twitter, K-E-R-S, at iCloud.com. Or you can use the hashtag Twitterkers on Twitter, and then you can contact us that way. But of course, don't put what it's for, because this is the secret group. What have we got this week? What does anyone want to bring up? There is the website. The website's been updated with a champions banner and yellow and green confetti, I noticed, which is lovely. It's a suitable champions celebration on twitterkers.co.uk, which is indeed wonderful to see. And also, we had some tweets. Now, what do we do? So from the previous week, we were talking about players who maybe had a better song than their ability, which again strikes me as slightly harsh, but James Hotchkiss did send a gif of Elvis doing Suspicious Minds with the line, Libra, Mark Libra. Now, I loved Mark Libra. I thought he was a brilliant player, but I mean, you know, probably not the most reliable for when he could turn it on, and helped by the fact he scored a wonderful goal 8 seconds after coming on against Manchester City on his debut.
I don't remember that chant. I remember Mark Libra, but I don't remember the
I'm glad you said that, Steve, because, yeah.
Really? Unless it's a figment of someone's imagination, I don't know. But I was pretty sure that was the chant. But there we go.
Okay. Well,
of course, Ollie Skip did finally get a song on Saturday, which was Oliver Skip, We Want You To Stay, which was...
gone the whole season, was only left one game out because he played 24 hours before it or something. And it just...
I'm done, lads.
He didn't want to go down the tunnel either, did he? It was so alien to him having to leave the pitch before he was supposed to. He didn't know where to go.
He did get to do the waving the crutches up in the air celebration during the, when the team were jumping up and down, which is, I don't know, there's something really comical about that. I don't know what it is, but
your foot in a big cast as well makes it even more comical, doesn't it? There's got to be a small chance he turns up at Oakwell in crutches and plays, hasn't there? The way down.
Would you be allowed? I mean, I guess a protective boot is just like a big shin pad, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
You can do a lot of damage with that.
You can welly one in from 40 yards with that, can't you?
I think you could.
Maybe throw Tetti on for Sorensen with 10 minutes to go, and then just bring Skip on for Tetti, like with another 5 minutes to go, so that Tetti can have his moment and then have it again when he goes off. And then Skip can have
I imagine just trying to wait for the big goodbye, but there's no one there to say it. No one there to say it.
It is mad, actually, to think that Oakwell could be a venue for a Premier League match next season, that we could be back there in the Premier League.
In fairness, they've improved the press box significantly, and there are far fewer outdoor pee up a wall toilets. So they've made significant investment there.
I was there for, the Daniel Farker's first season, the press box was grim.
Yes.
It was a row of school desks, wasn't it?
Yeah. But then they brought in four ways so you could plug in your laptop, and before you knew it, they had desks. So,
and now they're nearly in the Premier League. So start with the press box, improve that, and see what happens on the pitch.
I love listening to, you know, reporters and press officers talk about the quality of the ground in relation to how good the press box is. What kind of volivons do they do at
I should say, Oakwell's a great ground, though. It is one of my favourite to visit.
Well, can I quick question to both of you?
Yes.
What's the worst ground for in terms of press box, press officer conditions, all that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, I always thought Griffin Park was pretty terrible for that reason, that there wasn't enough room. You could sit there, so you had to have your arms by your side. So there's no real working space. And then likewise, if you're at the end of that row and you've got, you know, eight journalists next to you. They all have to leave you to get out, whether it's at halftime or whatever. And then you'd go down to a room and, you know, it's just like a bit of a classroom.
At Griffin Park, you had the massive pillar that got in the way of watching any penalty that was being taken as well.
Yeah, that's a problem, but at Elland Road. There's a post in the way of each penalty area, which is like, I literally can't see the most important part of the pitch from this seat. And you want me to cover the game? Or they don't obviously want you to cover the game, but yeah.
And also, is it the London Stadium, West Ham's ground? That you are so far away, and I haven't been as a fan to that stadium. I cannot imagine how soulless it is there.
I always think about the Olympics when I'm there, so I get a kind of a warm, fuzzy feeling. So I really enjoy it. Goodison Park is another where you're just sort of entrapped, really, in it. So it's those older grounds, really, but. You know, there's some very nice grounds to go and watch football. And I know the away fans, hopefully they get to go. Well,
they're all lovely to watch up from, really, especially when you're doing it for free. They're all lovely to watch from.
We're talking about professional issues here.
I'll tell you, sorry to bang on about this, but being at Millwall when we lost 4-0 and being sat on the end of the row next to the Millwall fans was one of the scariest experiences in my life, but probably not as scary as if we'd been winning 4-0, though. Exactly. So I was quite grateful that we were losing.
That's the way, most definitely. I did get some messages as well. The other thing we've been doing is pictures of you in the background of stills on the television or whichever. So Graham Norman got in touch. Graham is next to the dugout celebrating, I think that's Justin Fashanu's goal against Liverpool, the iconic goal. And he's with his kids, and apparently they weren't that impressed because they were more interested in Kevin Keegan's perm. But what a wonderful screen image. So there we go. I will retweet that later in the week, Graham. So there we go. That's great. There was the one I forgot about last week, and I found it. It was from Cyncoed, Cyncoed. I've almost certainly not pronounced that properly. It's Ed. So his name is Ed. That's easier. He had sent me a direct message on Twitter that he knew where his seat was, and he was constantly in the background on all of the BBC Sport stills in 2014. I think that was probably because Norwich conceded a lot of goals by the look of it.
There's another really good one from Ben Bray at 99 Ben Bray 1 on Twitter. It's actually at the London Stadium. Oh, no, it might be at Upton Park, actually, but it's away to West Ham. And Cameron Jerome has just missed. And there's a series of fans, all of them behind the goal with their hands on their heads, mouths open wide, in disbelief at the fact that he hasn't scored. I don't know which one Ben is, but there are some absolutely fantastic
ones. All suffering from Cameron Jerome syndrome there.
I mean, you'd think that by then they wouldn't have looked quite so shocked, but
they might have readied themselves by then.
Yeah. Well, I remember him getting asked by my colleague Dave Freezer whether, you know, why he couldn't cut it in the Premier League, and that was in the mix zone at Wembley just after the playoff final. And so I think he swore at him.
Your Kieran Dowell question.
Quite. One slight worrying development is that Charlie, who I think, I don't know if I'm outing him here, who runs the ME Other Business account, appears to have changed his account name to Kenny Other Business. So I don't know if he's got wind of ME leaving already or what that is, or whether he's just preparing for the, I don't know. But there we go. Speaking of which, do we have ME Other Business? Anyone?
I've got a challenge for Steve for next week, if that's okay. Oh, no. Sorry, Steve. Brilliant. Oh, look at his face.
His face, gosh. His face. Not seen that before.
Back to our discussion earlier in the pod about the potential, we've missed out on the potential to get 100 points, obviously. I want to know if any other football team has ever got finished the season on 99 points. Okay. Oh, look at it. His face has just dropped again. And B, this is quite big in cricket with batsmen scores. There are certain scores that have never been scored. So, for example, I don't know, something like 243 may never have been scored. Is there and this is probably impossible, Steve, but is there a number of points in a season that has never been finished on by any club ever?
Ooh, good question. The annoying thing is I want to find out. So I've
yeah, I thought this might be I thought this might be horrific for you because you will want to find out.
In answer to your first question, I think, don't correct me, I think Wolves went up with 99.
I was just about to say that.
Four or five years ago.
Okay. They did. Yeah, 2017-18, they finished on 99 points.
Michael's done the same weird thing as me, gone back trawling through the last few championship seasons to see who got what. So I think that might be right, but I'll look into it. That'll keep me busy, won't it? On bank.
You've got a week.
I've got a week.
Yeah, nothing else to do, surely. On that note, I think we are done then in that case. Thanks for listening, as always. One more to go, which will be after the Barnsley game. Enjoy following it. Take care. Have fun. See you later. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.